I am a poor wayfaring stranger, while traveling through this world of woe. Yet there's no sickness, toil, or danger in that bright world to which I go. I know dark clouds
Hello, Tea Time fans and true believers. This is your editor, Taylor Wilkie, popping in just to say this is part two of Ivy and Dwayne's conversation with Deacon Joyce. And if you haven't listened to the first episode that was released last week, head on back in your podcast app and take a listen to that, because there's definitely a lot of good info in that episode. Otherwise, the first voice you will hear is Dwayne's, and he will be picking up the conversation right where we left off last week. Thanks for listening.
It's just mindful, because you think in around that time, and this is brought up another history lesson, like right at the same time you have the Civil Rights Movement, you have Jonathan Daniels as being the champion.
Yes.
So you
yes.
have us going down south saying, oh my God, we need to end segregation, mm-hmm. yet
segregation is right
here.
Segregation is right here in Rhode Island, and I have experienced it as a young person here several times. When I first came down here, I was 14. My mother had remarried a man from Rhode Island. I didn't want to come, so I didn't come the first year.
Okay.
So I stayed up in Massachusetts with my cousin in Cambridge.
Okay.
Because I was comfortable there. My family was all there. I was comfortable. I didn't know anybody in Rhode Island, and I was tired of moving. So we came down here, and I go to the high school. First, my mother wanted me to go to classical. I said no, because I had gone to Girls Latin in Boston.
Yeah.
And I said, no, I don't want 4 years of, we've been 3 years. 3 years of strictly all that. Busy, trying to keep up with, because I'm black for one thing, to keep up my marks to all the other high students and everything. So I didn't want that. So I went to Hope. I walk into the history class. There she is. Agnes Ethia, my history teacher. She says to me, first she starts, your name's Braithwaite. I said, no ma'am, it's not, it's Brathwaite. No, it's pronounced Braithwaite. I said, no, it is not, it is Brathwaite. My grandfather's been pronouncing it all these 60 something odd years, it's Brathwaite. Okay, so you Spanish? One of them Cape Verdeans?
Oh.
Puerto Rican? I said, no. You're a little colored girl then? I went, yes, and I'm proud of it. Take that last seat back there in the row, last row there. Well, there was a seat right up in the front, next to the twins. And I'll never forget Dorothy. And I forget what her sister's name was, Pat. The twins, they said, here's a seat right here. Come join us. And they were two white girls. And I said, okay, and I sat right there. After school, I went home, told my mother what happened.
Mm-hmm.
My mother didn't have to be into work until 10 o'clock. So she came to school with us, my sister and I, that morning. went to the principal's office and told him what happened. Joe Delaney, who was assistant principal, was sitting there. Now, Joe Delaney was 6'5", 200 and something odd pounds, a football player. He said, "She did what?" And I said exactly what happened. And he said, "We'll take care of it, Mrs. Miles. You don't have to worry about it." Next time I tell Delaware, now he's used to segregation.
Yes.
We are not. And he came, he was hungry, so my stepfather said, "Take him out to somewhere, go to dinner." So Topps Diner was right there on North Main Street up near. It's now the National Guards, but it used to be the Rhode Island Auditorium. So we take him there to eat, and we go inside. We're waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. My cousin goes, "They're not going to wait on us." I said, yes, they are. "No, they're not." He says, "I know." I said, "But we're up here in the north. They're going to wait on us." He said, "No, they're not." Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they did. They asked us to leave. Mm-hmm. Now, this is New England. So I said, "You got to be kidding me." And so when we came home, my stepfather said, "Did you get something to eat?" We said, "No." "Why?" So we told him where we went. He said, "Wrong place to go." Mm-hmm. "They'll never accept a person in color there." Mm-hmm. So I am not used to it. I was born and raised in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. We lived in a community where our street where we lived on the corner of Mass Avenue and Clarendon. My grandmother lived on the next street. My Aunt Esther lived on Clarendon. There's black and white families all the way up. We all got along. Me a note saying, "I borrowed such and such, and I'll this way, and we'll replace it." That's the way it was. Come down here in Rhode Island, it's New England still. Mm. Why the racism? Why do we have down in Hope Valley the neo-Nazis, up in North Scituate area, the neo-Nazis and all of them? What is going on?
Mm-hmm. It has been described that Rhode Island does have a Jim Crow tradition. So although we may not necessarily have the laws that the South had, you definitely have the customs, the practice. Even if you look at our neighborhoods today, it is definitely still based on race.
True, because South Providence, that was always a black neighborhood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the West End was always a black neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Where we lived on Camp Street was mostly blacks, but the store on the corner of Lippitt and Camp was Syrian. Mm. And you could walk in there at any time, and the family treated you with all the... You were always welcome. Mm-hmm. They never treated you as somebody different than they were. And matter of fact, their daughter is still one of our best friends today. Mm-hmm. Rosie's down in Florida, Naples, Florida. We talk back and forth all the time as to what her latest thing is, or who her latest man is. But Dave and Mary always made everyone in that neighborhood feel welcome. So I was kind of shocked when you come here and end up finding there are people who are really racist. Mm-hmm. And then to find out that Rhode Island is was the place where the slaves actually came in, Newport, mm-hmm. and Bristol. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This was the stomping grounds of slavery. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, no wonder.
Yeah.
And the church was part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the Episcopal Church was part of it. Why? I still don't understand all of this. And at my age, I've lived through a lot.
Yeah.
But I don't understand why it has to be this way, especially here in New England, where supposedly we were against slavery, but in all actuality, here in this state, you weren't. Because you helped it go along.
Mm-hmm.
You brought them in. You went to the coast of Apple down south.
Oh, up and you had our officials. They were always saying, well, that Providence Plantations has nothing to do with slavery. It was about farming. And, you know, it was not the plantations we thought about it. But then as we've revealed, as you said, Rhode Island did have slavery. We did have an existence throughout the state. And so, you know, remembering how in 2010 there was the referendum to remove the state and it did not pass then.
No.
And then when it, you know, that was what 77% said no to, you know, 77% of the voters who voted in 2010 said no. And then even you think about when it passed in 2020, it was only 52% who said yes. So we barely had a majority to change the state name and just drop off the Providence Plantations. And even still today, there's still, it's still on, not only in the seals in terms of the state house, but they still even have it on letterhead, which you can easily change electronically. So it's still showing there, mm-hmm. as if they want to hold on to it and to have the treatment of Black people in that experience even throughout the state today.
And that's true. That's very true when you stop and think of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unreal to me.
Yeah.
I mean, when they say Rhode Island, when people say, oh, there's no racism. We don't have that here in New England. Yes, you do. It's under the carpet. You just don't see it, mm-hmm. or you don't want to see it. When you see somebody treated, person of color, being treated totally different than you are, that's racism. When people of color are stopped constantly
mm-hmm.
by the police for no reason whatsoever, just because of the color of their skin, that's racism. I experienced that right here in Rhode Island, being stopped twice, once in East Providence and once here in Providence. East Providence policemen stopped me saying my back tail light was out. I had just had my car totally serviced.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 11 o'clock at night, and my father had always taught us, my biological father had always taught me, when you're driving, if you're stopped by the police, and also the number of the car they're driving.
Hmm.
So if anything happens, you have that information and they can be cited. So I did just that. When I got into Providence, I got into Fox Point, there was a policeman right there. So I pulled over and I called him over and I said, may I talk to you, please? And he said, yes, ma'am, how may I help you? I said, can you check my tail lights, please? He said, yeah, hit your brake lights. I did. He said, okay. He came back. He said, there's nothing wrong with your lights. Why are you asking me to check them? I said, well, an East Providence policeman just stopped me and said my light on the driver's side was out. He said, no, your lights on the car are fine, ma'am. He said, with him, we're trying to get that solved. He said, if you have to go out there, don't leave there at after hours. Make sure you leave there early. Now, I went to a club there. That's where I went on a Friday night. But I couldn't go there anymore because I didn't know if they were going to stop me
mm.
for no reason whatsoever. The next time I worked at People's Bank, which no longer exists. It was downtown. And I'm coming home. I work night shift. And here comes the state police. And I'm going, oh, please, Lord, help me out. Help me out here, please, Lord. What did I do? I know I didn't run through a light. I know I didn't run through a stop sign. What's wrong? They pull me over. One gets out, comes to the car, asks my license and registration. Then he's checking my whole car. And I'm going, what the devil is going on here? Finally, 5 minutes later, the other officer comes up. He says, let her go. He said, what? Let her go. Why? We've got the wrong car. Mm-hmm. I said, excuse me? Well, you looked. Mm-hmm. I said, fine. I went home. The next morning, I called my brother-in-law and told him what happened. And he said, his brother happened to be there, who was a fireman in the fire station. We had a fire station, his brothers were firemen, they were there. They said, the next time that happened, you just get out of your car, walk down to the fire station and say, we want so-and-so. Mm-hmm. And we'll come out and we'll make sure nothing goes down. He said, you don't have to be subject to that. And that's why it's hard for me. I'm 82 years old. It's still hard for me to realize that this is still going on in the 21st century and more rampant now.
And they have different ways of how they're doing it. I can remember when they first, this is like what, a few years ago, they put up the speed cameras. Yes. Mm. Remember how they were doing it? They wanted to place them near the schools. And so they put it on Thurber's Ave near Juanita Sanchez. They had it here also on Hope Street. You know, they had them placed specifically. But what I found, and this is where I say that there's the economic racism here. On Hope Street, they were sending out warnings. Mm-hmm. But then on places there like Thurber's Ave, they were actually ticketing.
Yeah.
And so when you saw people having to go to the police complex, the safety complex to pay these tickets, the majority of them were black and brown people. Mm-hmm. And so I said, so why is it up here over in the predominantly white neighborhood, everyone was getting warnings versus those in the predominantly black and brown neighborhoods, they were getting charged. Like, so what was the difference? And no one could or would answer that question. Mm-hmm.
And those tickets are expensive.
Yeah, that was, what, 2018? So it was, it's actually, when you think about it, still recent. But that recently happened when you had the city of Providence roll out under the disguise of, we care about the children. Yes, and you should be implementing it equally. So everyone either should be getting tickets or everyone should be getting warnings. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't have had this difference
right
in terms of the treatment.
Yeah, the first time it happens, you should only get a warning. Mm-hmm. After that, maybe you then get a ticket.
Yeah.
But the first one should always be a warning.
And the ticket should not be that expensive. They're like $80 or something. They're crazy.
$80.
I'm like, if you're going to charge me $80, I want a human here.
What's happened, Tucket is rough. And our folks, don't go over that. Don't go 26. Don't go 27. Do 25. Because they will stop you for those couple of things. And I was coming off of Division Street. And the light was just turning yellow and I went through it. Well, he ticketed me saying I went through a red light. And I knew enough not to answer him back. I just handed in my license and everything. And when I got the thing in the mail to say appear in court, I went and they looked at my record and they said, you've never had a ticket. I said, no, I have not. Hmm. Oh, you can go. Mm-hmm. This is cleared. Don't worry about it. And I said to myself, something else. The other time I got a ticket was down in downtown Providence, actually, before I got this one. My car was parked. City Hall. I worked at Rhode Island Housing at the time. So there was a street in back of Rhode Island House, the building we had. No sign saying no parking. And it was like an alleyway. So I would park there. And I parked there all the time, never a problem. This time I got a ticket, but I was the only car there that had gotten ticketed. All the other cars that were there had not been ticketed. So I go to court. The judge happened to bat in high school. He didn't remember me, but he remembered my sister, and he kept looking at me because my sister, older sister, was very popular. I was just her little sister. That was it. So he said, asked me to explain it. So I explained it. I said, sir, this is what happened. I came out of work, found a ticket on my car. All the other cars did not have tickets. They were all city workers, City Hall workers. My car was the only one ticketed. He said, would you like to speak to the officer who ticketed you? I said, yes, I would. I would love to have him be here. Okay, we will set another date. So you get over. Heard again about it. Not knowing that this was filmed on TV. It's the judge that's the...
Oh, yeah, Judge Caprio. Judge Caprio.
Yes, Frank Caprio. Yes. Who married one of my high school classmates. And I didn't know it until I walked into my girlfriend's club and everybody's saying, here she comes, the movie star. I said, what are you all talking about? And the guy I was going out with, he said, you were on TV the other night. My nephew calls, who was East Providence policeman. He says, Auntie Joyce, you really didn't say what you said on TV, did you? Please tell me. He said, why did you say that? I said, because it was the truth. And my niece goes, you know, my aunt's always going to tell the truth. And so she did. He goes, but Wendy, you don't say that. I said, why not? I said, it was true. I was the only one ticketed. The rest were City Hall workers. Why was my car the only one ticketed? There's another form of discrimination. Mm-hmm. So it's something that you worry about a person of color every day. I worry about my nephews and nieces here in Rhode Island. And I nephews, you don't know one day from the next if they're going to come home.
I mean, even it was on the news, and my family in Atlanta reached out to me, hearing about how that black church in North Providence was targeted.
Yes.
And the person who was a white man who... was trying to burn down that church.
Mm-hmm. He got caught.
They got caught. And yet what they've been talking about is that there has been some issues, you know, with a next door neighbor about that church being there. But yeah, when they were talking about like who would want to target it, apparently there had been stuff placed posted online about the church being targeted.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So again, we're in 2024, it's Black History Month, and here we have someone, I mean, the fact that they saw that this man walked a couple of blocks from the gas station, getting gas to go there, go to that church to set it on fire, and apparently tried to break
exactly
into the church
where
first.
It is, because I pass it all the time.
Yeah. I mean, so you're thinking about this, and it's like, and what was astounding was then the online chatter where there was one person said, well, everyone knows that North Providence is racist. And I'm like, wow. So it is an acknowledged fact of how we're still living here in Rhode Island. and that you can't even be safe to go to church.
Mm-hmm. And that is sad. Yeah. That is sad. Like I said, it's the 21st century. You would think by now it would be dead. Mm-hmm. But it's not. It has become more prevalent now than it was in the 50s. We're going back in time. We're not moving forward. We're going back to the time of during World War II, before that, where racism was really, really prevalent, where people were being hung because of their color. We're going back to that because, let's face it, in this century, black men and women have been killed for no reason whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Just because of who they are. I mean, George Floyd, so a $20 bill that was counterfeit, he probably ended up being killed for no reason whatsoever. That young woman in Louisiana or Kentucky, I forget.
Breonna Taylor.
Yeah. Yeah. Who was killed. Wrong place. And yet, the thing that really aggravates me the most is the fact that the majority of these people get off for killing somebody of color. They don't serve any time whatsoever. But had it been reversed, the black person would be under the jail. They wouldn't even live to tell it. So what is wrong with this right now? What is wrong? Why? Are these so-called Christians who go to church every Sunday, go into church every Sunday, pray to God, then leave that church and do things that are against God's commandments? How do we get around all of this?
Do you think your experiences, because like, you've closed like 2 churches and 1 almost. Mm-hmm. How has that informed, one, your order, so being ordained, and also just your faith in general?
I think because of the fact that the grandparents who lived it.
Mm.
My grandfather was from, my grandfather's Native American on my mother's side. And my grandmother, she was white and black. They lived in Alexandria, so coming up in the 19th century, they lived through the slavery bit and all that stuff. And my father's parents, they lived through it because they were from Barbados. Mm-hmm. And that was a slave nation from England. And so when they came to this country, my grandfather's parents came to this country, we were taught from day one, we are all equal, we are all God's children. It was always taught to us every single day. I had an aunt, the aunt that lived on Clarendon Street. She didn't care what color you were. She had an open door policy too. Holidays, if she saw you walking down the street with no place to go, come on into my house, sit down. She didn't care what color you were or who you were. And that's the way we were brought up. So that's how my faith stays with me. And I constantly talk to God about it to help me get through all of this. So that's one, another way that I keep my faith, and I keep like this word here, hope. I always continue to hope that things will
change for the better. It may not be in my time. It may not be in my son's time. But I'm hoping maybe by the time my great-grandson grows up, it'll be in his time. Because he's only 8 months, 9 months old come next week. Yes. So, his hoping. And I think being ordained, I've always believed that I was meant to do God's work. So I always remember the passage where Jesus asked Peter 3 times, "Do you love me?" And Peter answers him 3 times, "Yes, I do." And then he says to him, "Take care of my sheep." And that's what I always feel I should do. Take care of his sheep. And that's why I'm here. Still on this earth. He's not ready for me yet because I haven't finished taking care of his sheep or giving up my faith. Everybody still asks me because I lost the 2 grandchildren with 379 days. I'll never forget that. How do you get through it? And it's through my faith in God. And that's how you get through anything. You keep your faith and you talk to God and ask him to get you through each day. Those who come into church and say they're God's children and yet walk out that door and do the exact opposite. He created us all, but they're not following what he asked them to do. Mm-hmm. They're not taking care of his sheep. They're doing the exact opposite. They're hypocrites. Mm-hmm. And there are many of those. Yes. Down south, my sister talked to me when I talked to her a couple of weeks ago. She said, "Do you know what's going on now?" I said, "No." She said, "The evangelicals have now said that Mr. T is the new Christ. God has sent him to be our new Messiah." I said, "Oh my goodness. Here we go. We are in trouble." Because God would never send anybody like that to be take over and do God's work. He's not doing it. And a lot of the people in this world today running around here, going to church, then coming out, killing people, they're not doing it. Mm-hmm. And we all, I don't care what color you are. I really don't. Each other, brown, Asian, gay, what have you. He created us all. You need to love us all. Mm-hmm. So we need help. Mm-hmm. We need help. And tearing down churches isn't going to help it. Burning down churches isn't going to help it. It's only going to make it worse. And I just hope and pray that this bishop can get the cathedral back to where it belongs.
Yes.
As a cathedral. As people going in and worshiping once again. It would be nice. It may not be in my time. Because he's young. He's young. Because he's younger than it would be. Not to have to go through each day wondering or not your child is going to come home safe and sound. Mm-hmm. And I call my son every Sunday and I or have him call me, make sure he calls me to make sure that everything is okay. Mm-hmm. I don't do it on a daily basis because he's a grown man. And I don't think he would appreciate his mother calling him every day. So I don't. But my granddaughters, they call me, check on me to make sure everything is okay up here because they live in the South. But it's hard. It is hard to know that they may not come home one day because of some white person didn't like the way they looked at them.
Mm.
Or they were in the wrong neighborhood at the wrong time. It's just crazy. And that's not just in the South. It's right here in New England, in Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm.
As Duane just finished saying, that church in North Providence, they weren't bothering anybody. They were going to church. It's a church. It's God's house. Why destroy it? Because you didn't like the people who attended there? There's no need for it. There's no need for it. So, I don't know. I just don't know. Help me out here, Duane.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've been having this discussions with my mother, and we compare notes, and she talks about how, you know, being in Georgia, in the area, she's like, there's certain parts where she looks at, she sees all the Confederate flags, and she's like, all right, I got to go. She said, I know these people about. And I said, you know what, honestly, I said, I somewhat envy you because it's blatant in your face. I said, up here, it is very hard to determine if someone is just merely innocently being ignorant or they being low-key racist and pretending that they're an ally. So I said, it is exhausting to have to go through this time and time again when you're in discussions and you hear a response, which I'm like, did I really just hear that? Did you just really say that?
Yeah.
You really are not conscious of what you just said. This is where talk is exhausting. So that's what a black person, dark complected black person, like you said, where you're wondering, in this case, my experience has been, you know, I see white people dressed a certain way getting into an establishment. But when it comes to me, oh, because I have this coat or because I'm dressed a certain way, I can't be let in. That has happened to me. But again, this is supposed to be the city, the creative capital, where we all, particularly Providence, where we all can have a, you know, opportunity to belong and to make it. And I'm like, no, do you not see the segregation here? And I remember using that word a few years ago, and people were just like, looking like, oh, what do you mean? But I'm like, go into Southside, go into West End, go into Cranston Street, where you see one opposite end, where now the area is becoming predominantly white.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting a lot more attention and investment, and yet the street across, the same street across the street, which is predominantly Latino and black people, it is not getting that investment and attention. It's right here. It's shown. It's being displayed. It's the same if we're sitting at Redeemer. Hope Street looks very different when, three, four blocks down, Camp Street is very different.
Mm-hmm.
So you see the attention. When I look at the treatment in terms of the care, the investment, it's very clear that Providence and Rhode Island, they have some racist practices in terms of who gets what attention and care. And then the same thing is, I'm just reflecting, when you're talking about how, you know, how the bishop decided that the churches were to be closed. And me, again, someone who's been in financial services and who's talking about ending asset poverty, it's like, well, what happened to all that money from the sale of those churches? Who got it? And if it's the diocese, then it's like, well, what y'all been doing with that money?
Probably went into the cathedral's endowment. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. I have no facts to back myself up there.
It went
to, I just want to say that very clearly.
I assume that's what happened. It did.
I have no fact.
But, you know, Church of the Epiphany, which is, again, another church, I'm like, well, what happened to that money?
Mm-hmm.
The sale of that building.
Mm-hmm.
And how are you using it if we are now talking about we're being anti-racist? It's not just speaking it. You actually have to take the action. You also have to do the investment of the money into those practices, into achieving that goal. So I just think right here, you know, with the diocese, there is an opportunity to reconcile and change.
When you're talking about, it's right here. It is right here. I can remember when my son came to me and said, he's getting married. And I said, oh, great. No big deal. The girl he was marrying is Irish Catholic. And I loved Colleen. Love my daughter, ex-daughter-in-law to this day. And I'm in work, and I'm saying to my people I work with for several years, my son's getting married. Oh, that's nice. Who's he marrying? And I say, you're going to allow that? Excuse me? What do you mean, allow it? He's a grown man. He's ready to leave to serve in the United States Air Force to protect you people. What do you mean, allow? Well, she's white. She's not of his race. I said, yeah, so? Have you looked at me lately? I don't have brown eyes like most people of color do. My eyes are light. My skin is a lot lighter. I don't have natural black features. Have you really looked at me? I am a product of mixed races. My mother has told me since day one, you're Heinz 57. So do I care? No, I don't. So long as she respects him and loves him, I do not care. And another time in work, the stuff for the welfare stuff came, it was coming. I worked at the bank, and some tickets for the, what do you call it, food stamps came, were coming through. The girl says, well, ask Joyce, she would know about them. Whoa, did that. One of the girls said to me, Joyce, come out of that room. Please come out of that room, because she knew I was ready to push that woman right out the window. I said to her, excuse me? What do you mean I know about it? Because I'm black, I have no clue what food stamps are or what they look like. Raises food stamps to raise us for it. So if you're pretending that all blacks get food stamps, no, it's mostly the white race. Oh, let me clue you here right now, here and now, honey. Mm-hmm. So those are things that people don't stop and realize when they're saying them.
It's true. There's also nothing wrong with getting food stamps.
No, there isn't. When the blizzard of 78, they gave them out to people because they're home, not working. They need to get food on the table. So they gave them to the senior citizens and those other folks who couldn't get into their work. So to me, there was no harm. There's no harm in getting food stamps. You need them, yes. It's when you get them and sell them. Mm. That's the problem I have. But to turn around and figure out that all blacks get food stamps, no, we don't. And those are the things that really get me, because that's what a lot of the Caucasian race believes, that we all are on welfare, that we're all collecting food stamps, that we're all ignorant, we don't know how, we don't have education. I have more people who are well-educated in my family than a lot of white families do. Mm-hmm. I have had I call him an uncle, he was my second cousin, but because of his age and everything, we called him uncle. Professor at Cornell University, was there for years, was one of the first blacks to graduate from Brown University, he and his brother. His brother was an attorney for civil rights down in Delaware. They have named a building after him at the University of Delaware. So, I mean, to assume that we're all ignorant and don't know what to do, that's a lot of bull. Because you're seeing more, I'm learning more and more about my black history than I have ever since going to school. And I'm learning it through Facebook when people put out there, especially this month, put out their things about people I never even heard of who have made it in this world and created things that we use every single day. And I never knew it, that it was a black person that did it. Because we were always told the white man did it. But you learn as the years go by that it's not so.
Yeah.
So it's a sad situation.
Definitely. Do you have any final thoughts, anything that you haven't touched on that you wanted to?
I just think that if we want to get rid of anti-racism, the Caucasian race has to sit down and really listen to us and hear what we have to say and acknowledge to the fact that women, the fact that can't, things today. We're the same body parts under the skin. And we are all descendants of Adam and Eve.
Yes.
Without them, we wouldn't be here today.
Yes.
And that's it for me.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story and gifting us with your time. If someone wanted to see you on a Sunday morning, where could they do that?
They can see me at Church of the Redeemer on Hope Street, Providence.
Great. Well, thank you, Joyce, so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me here. I appreciate it. This is my first podcast.
I'm going there to see my father. I'm going there no more to
Thank you for listening to Tea Time Theology, a ministry of St. John's Cathedral in Rhode Island. We would like to thank our producers, Ivy Swinsky and Taylor Wilkie. Special thanks to Mariah Akande and David Hines for this season's music. Additionally, we would like to thank Dwayne Keyes for co-hosting this season and the Reverend Patrick Campbell for consulting this season. Our sponsor, the Episcopal Diocese of Rhode Island, and the Right Reverend Nicholas Nisley, as well as our guest today. Follow us at Tea Time Theology on all social medias.